Good morning. It's 8:06. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Parker Malatesta, filling in for Leslie Thatcher on this Thursday, July 24th. Happy Pioneer Day. Cool one this morning, sitting around 49 degrees in Park City, a little bit warmer, around 56 in Heber, but it's expected to get a lot warmer today. To talk more about the weather, I will send it off to ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Happy Pioneer Day. It's time for the Wasatch Back forecast for your Pioneer Day. We're looking at mostly sunny to partly cloudy skies. Watch out for an isolated sprinkle and also watch out for some smoke and haze in the sky. But overall, it should be a fairly decent Thursday across the region. High temperatures in Park City will climb into the mid-80s this afternoon with, again, mostly sunny to partly sunny skies. The Heber Valley will see partly sunny skies with temperatures climbing into the upper 80s to right around 90 degrees. The rain chance today is only at about 10% or less, so don't expect much in the way of a lot of rain. Now, as we go into your Friday, as we continue on with that long holiday weekend for some, we're going to be looking at lots of sunshine. Temperatures will climb back into the mid-80s in Park City. We'll see those highs climbing to near 90 in the Heber Valley. As we go into the upcoming weekend, look for mostly sunny to partly sunny skies out there. Temperatures will be climbing into the low 80s on Saturday for Park City. We'll be seeing those highs climbing around 90 degrees in the Heber Valley. By Sunday, look for mostly sunny skies and highs in the mid to upper 80s in Park City. We'll see those high temperatures climbing into the low 90s in the Heber Valley. We're going to stick with that warming trend as we go throughout the next couple of days as well into next week. Monday, look for lots of sunshine. High temperatures will be in the upper 80s in Park City, which means, yes, we're back to the mid-90s for highs for us in the Heber Valley. It's going to get quite toasty to kick off next week as we go into your Tuesday. We'll call it mostly sunny skies. Highs will be in the mid-80s in Park City once again, mid to upper 80s, and we'll be seeing those highs back into the low to mid-90s again for the Heber Valley. We may start to add in a few more clouds by the middle of next week. We'll call it partly cloudy skies for both Park City and the Heber Valley by next Wednesday. And along with that, we'll add in about a 10% chance of an isolated pop-up shower. Still, it will be mostly dry for most of the next 7 days, but there are signs of increasing rain chances by the end of next week. Fingers crossed for that. Let's look at your latest forecast from the ABC4 Forecast Center. I'm meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Now with an update on the trails, our local trails, on the line with me, I have Mountain Trails Foundation Executive Director Laura Anthony. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning, and happy Pioneer, or as we like to say here in Park City, happy Pioneer Day. We've got the Extreme Cup coming to town Thursday through Saturday, so that's today for the next 3 days. Every park and field in Park City is utilized. This event brings about 50,000 people to the Wasatch Back. So it's going to be really busy, but this group luckily is not that that well known for trail use. Might find a few hikers out there, but we certainly won't be seeing 50,000 extra people on the trail. So that's the good news. Starting Monday, it looks like Basin Rec will be Monday, July 28th. Basin Rec will be doing the East Side Berm Trail along Silver Summit Parkway. It'll be closed for 2 weeks. 2 weeks, they're repaving that area. It's kind of across from the North Round Valley Trailhead area. Closure is from Kingsford to Highland Drive, and they said they're reporting nothing on their single track. Rick from the Mountain Trails team is reporting we've got Lower Jenny's and Seldom Seen remain closed for Park City Mountain Terrain Park improvements. Please respect those closures. There have been instances of people taking the closures down and throwing them into the weeds, which is out into the woods, which is really super not cool, because we put the closures up for a reason, for safety reasons. Please just respect those. Other than that, we don't have a whole lot going on around town on the trails. It's dusty, it's going to be warm, and things are good. So go out there, have a nice day, and smile at your fellow trail users.
All right, thanks, Laura. Have a good one.
Yeah, you too. Bye.
Coming up, Rocky Mountain Power's David Eskelson and Jonah Whitesides explain what's behind South Summit's recent power outages and why they may continue. Then Park City Planning Director Rebecca Ward has an update about the general plan. And the Arts Council of Park City and Summit Counties, Kendall Kelly, and Park City Gallery owner Maren Mullen share details about plein air in the gardens on Saturday. After that, stay tuned for Cool Science Radio at 9. Award-winning vintner Lisa Bishop Forbes talks about the science of winemaking. Then local tech entrepreneur and Mattia Mobility CEO Stephen Bowles shares how innovative robotic devices help people regain mobility and return to daily life. Well, as a reminder, local and state government offices will be closed today for Pioneer Day. The state holiday commemorates July 24, 1847, the day members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints reportedly arrived in the Salt Lake Valley. Also today, libraries in Summit and Wasatch counties will be closed along with the Park City Library. The Mark, Park City Ice Arena, and Bays and Rec Fieldhouse will be open regular hours. In Wasatch County, trash pickup will be delayed one day. Thursday, trash pickup in Summit County remains the same. State liquor stores are also closed today for the holiday and will reopen tomorrow. U.S. post offices will remain open and mail will be delivered today. Also, the National Weather Service is forecasting critical fire weather conditions across Utah through the holiday weekend. The weather outlook includes gusty winds and low humidities in northern, central, and southern Utah and Uinta County in Wyoming. Amid drought and fire conditions, state officials have put Stage 1 fire restrictions in place. Stage 1 restrictions ban the use of open fires except within established facilities or improved campgrounds. They also ban fireworks or other pyrotechnics. Fireworks are banned in all of Summit County. That includes incorporated and unincorporated areas. In Wasatch County, fireworks will be allowed through July 25th in incorporated areas of Heber, Midway, Charleston, and Walsburg. For a complete map of fire restrictions in Summit and Wasatch counties, you can visit our website, kpcw.org. In other news, construction of the Heber Valley Temple can go forward after a judge said Wednesday that Wasatch County's approval of the project was legal. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports on that.
The decision from Judge Jennifer Mabee ends the legal battle over whether the county's use of a legislative development agreement to approve the project violated federal or state laws. A small group of residents in Red Ledges, the neighborhood across the street from the future temple site, sued the county in November 2023, shortly after leaders said the plans could go forward. The church joined the lawsuit as a defendant in January 2024. Maybe heard oral arguments from attorneys for the residents, the church, and Wasatch County June 2nd. During the hearing, the resident's attorney, Robert Mansfield, argued that the temple plans violated the Wasatch County General Plan and the state's laws for county land use. Mabee disagreed Tuesday, saying those arguments were not well supported. She wrote, the county followed a legitimate method for approving a development proposal, and she said even if the temple plans were inconsistent with the general plan, that wouldn't necessarily constitute a violation of the law. She also rejected the residents' claims that the development agreement amounted to spot zoning. The residents also raised concerns about RLUIPA, a federal law meant to protect religious institutions from discriminatory zoning. Mabee said in her ruling she found that the county considered RLUIPA as one factor among many in its decision to approve development plans. She also pushed back against Mansfield's argument that a temple is akin to a club, rather than a building that will benefit the whole community, commenting, quote, the court is hard-pressed to think of any church or business that serves 100% of the county's population. Mabee wrote that although the Red Ledges residents might be negatively affected by some aspects of the new temple, the building can still serve the general welfare. She said in the ruling, quote, it is the unfortunate reality with nearly any type of development that those in closest proximity will be the most directly impacted, but the court's role is not to substitute its own opinion about the chosen location for the temple project, end quote. With the lawsuit decided, the path is clear for the church to proceed with construction, nearly 3 years after the Heber Valley Temple's October 2022 groundbreaking ceremony. In a statement to KPCW, a spokesperson for The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints said it welcomed the court's ruling. The statement said, quote, since the temple site plan was approved by Wasatch County nearly 2 years ago, the church has paused moving forward with any construction while the judicial system reviewed the public process. Now the court has ruled that Wasatch County followed the law in approving the Heber Valley Temple. The church is looking forward to next steps in beginning construction, end quote. The temple will be built on an 18-acre site on Center Street. It will be 88,000 square feet with a steeple stretching 210 feet into the sky. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
On the line with me now, I have David Eskelson and Jonna Whitesides with Rocky Mountain Power. How's it going this morning, gentlemen?
Just fine. Very good. Thank you.
Yeah. So I guess to kick things off, we've gotten reports of some power outages in the South Summit Camas area as of late. Can one or both of you all just kind of give us the brief on what's going on in that area?
Sure. We've had a number of outages due to our enhanced safety settings program, which Jonna can explain a little more detail in a moment. I think most of the concern that we've been hearing from our customers involve two particular circuits. We have substations in Camas and in Oakley. And the Camas 12 circuit serves the southeast portion of Camas, south to Francis and Woodland. And the Oakley circuit that has been subject to a number of outages, Oakley 11 serves the town of the towns of Oakley and Marion, mm-hmm. and customers east along the Weber River and then north up to the east side of Rockport Reservoir. And there've been a number of outages because of these enhanced safety settings. Jonna, could you talk a little bit about our program there?
Yes, I will. As we know that being in Utah, we have a high fire risk, wildfire risk, and so these enhanced safety settings, what they are is the settings on the lines are set to that they'll de-energize within fractions of a second when they're either contacted by debris, wildlife, or even strong winds. So the whole purpose of that is to reduce the likelihood of equipment emitting sparks that could cause a wildfire. So what that does on the other side for reliability is that you will tend to see an increased or potential for increased of more outages. And then part of that, before we can turn the power back on, our crews actually have to go out and patrol the lines to physically inspect and make sure there is no debris, no disturbance on the line, because again, we're very cognizant of the wildfire danger and we want to reduce or minimize that risk as much as we can.
Yeah, so if I have it right, you're saying there's essentially kind of sensors along these power lines that, you know, like you said, track wind, wildlife, whatever it may be. And once those are triggered, it shuts off the line?
That's correct. It's a protective measure because when there's a disturbance that creates an electrical fault, it's always better, to have the protective device cut the power, rather than, produce a low voltage event or other electrical disturbance, because that can damage both our equipment and customer equipment, particularly electric motors like the compressors that run refrigerators and air conditioners.
Yeah, and we've had a listener that they reported to us that they counted at least 15 outages this year. Did you guys have an official tally just on that area and what impacts they've seen?
Yeah, we have registered, I think, 21 outages on these particular circuits because the sensitivity settings on these particular circuits are new this year. We've been using enhanced safety settings and wildfire protection for the past 3 years, and we have concentrated that area in areas of our system like this that exist in the urban wildland interface, because that's where the risk of wildfire is the greatest.
Yeah, I mean, can you expand on just the changes the company has made, as you referenced? You said about 3 years ago really started putting these in protections in place. What's really driving that?
John has been on the forefront of a lot of that work.
Yeah, so when we kind of look at some of those horrendous wildfires, we've seen them in California, mm-hmm. Texas, New Mexico, probably the most recent that people remember is the LA fires, Lahaina, Hawaii. We're looking at, what is this change in extreme weather events and the dryness that we're seeing here in the West? And so Rocky Mountain Power has said, well, what can we do? And there's a couple things we're doing. Long term, we're strengthening the system. So we're making things, switching out wooden poles for metal poles. We're doing covered conductor. We're doing some undergrounding in some areas. And those are the long term things that we can do to strengthen the system and reduce the risk of wildfire. In the interim, we also have these sensitive settings to where we're like, okay, certain parts of the system are not where they need to be at this point in terms of addressing the wildfire risk that we've seen not only here in Utah, but, you know, throughout the country. And so what are some of the things we can do in the immediacy, which is, again, these enhanced safety settings, which does interrupt people's lives. Like, we are cognizant of that. We understand that. And it really is one of those things where we're trying to balance the safety of the communities and not being the cause of a catastrophic wildfire.
Yeah. What's the best venue for residents, business owners who just want to stay updated on whether there is an outage or if they may need to report an outage? What's kind of the best resource for them?
I think the best resource is to make sure that their count has what's best is a mobile phone or an email address. And the company can coordinate and communicate directly with customers this way. So if you haven't created an account at RockyMountainPower.net, it's a good idea to do that. And make sure that you have contact information as a part of your account. Then, if you experience an outage, there are really two things that you can do. You can go to our outage page, which is on outages and safety at RockyMountainPower.net, and there's a map that that displays in real time where outages are happening. And because these particular safety settings are in response to immediate conditions that change. Looking at what's happened the last 2 months on these circuits, some of the disturbances have been caused by lightning. Some have been trees in line, wind, those kinds of things. And so we can't really provide advance notice because these conditions are things that that occur in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that you can do, of course, is call and report an outage. And that helps us because the number that you've registered with the company is keyed to your account. And so that outage map takes the calls that are the outage calls that are coming in and helps us determine, where calls are coming from, helps us determine, where the outage affected customers are located. We have a pretty good telemetry down to the substation level, but from the substation to the customer, we don't have two-way communications. And so if you're affected by an outage, calling in will help us determine where those outages are located and where our troubleshooters should go first. Typically what they do is they go to the relevant substation first to make sure that things are okay there. And then if things are in good order, there's no problem with the substation, then they patrol the lines. And we also have fault sensors on the lines that enable us, these are physical tags on the lines that indicate where faults have occurred. And so that greatly improves the ability of our troubleshooters and line crews to look at the conditions on the line and locate the faults and fix them.
Yeah, and I believe you all have been doing similar work on the power lines here in the Park City area. Is there a reason the South Summit area has been hit so hard with these outages?
I think the issue is that these two particular circuits have not had these enhanced safety settings, mostly because the conditions of humidity and fuel characteristics have been a little more moderate in previous years. One of the things that we do is monitor weather conditions, temperature, humidity, wind speed through a number of local weather stations that we've installed, particularly in areas like the Wasatch Back, where the fire risk is high. And so I think that's why these two particular circuits, have been more active than in the past. One of the things that we are doing in response to the feedback that we receive from customers is that we're reviewing and adjusting the sensitivity of these safety settings, where they are applied, particularly on these two circuits. And we're performing additional foot patrols and drone patrols of our assets to see if we can locate any areas that might be more prone to outages and taking measures we can do to increase our reliability. We have, technology on our system that can allow us to, reduce the number of customers during an outage event. Our engineers, take a look at problems all over our system every single day, particularly during the summer, because that's the time of year when our customers use the most energy. And so our engineering teams are looking at circuits that experience more trouble than usual, and they're assigned to work out solutions and decisions to increase the reliability of our service. We want to keep the power on, and we feel that particularly strongly. We know that outages are disruptive to our customers, and we really appreciate patience when outages occur. But we have to balance that, particularly in areas like this, mm-hmm. Where the fire risk is particularly high. We don't want to be the source of a spark that could cause a fire.
Are customers entitled to any compensation or assistance for the outages?
Well, we don't guarantee uninterrupted power. Severe weather of any kind, whether it's the heat of summer or the storms of winter, and anything in between, can create power outages. And our website has a lot of good information about preparing for power outages. And we also very much agree with the advice of emergency management officials at the county and state level. And their advice is everybody should be prepared to be without essential public services for up to 72 hours. Mm-hmm. And these are the kinds of things that they're talking about. The vast majority of these outages that are caused by our enhanced safety settings, until we can get out, patrol the line, make sure there's no trouble before we restore the power, most of these outages are about an hour long, maybe a little longer. I don't see any here on these two Camas and Oakley circuits that are longer than about an hour and 15 minutes. So we're really focused on getting the power back on as quickly as we possibly can. And we are working to reduce the frequency of outages always. But it's a good idea to be prepared for outages and have have an alternate plan and be ready to be without essential public services, for a certain amount of time, because it could happen at any time.
Yeah. Do you all have any kind of basic tips for just kind of dealing with outages?
Sure. I think it's always wise to have something ready. We have some tips on our website for producing an outage, or for putting together an outage kit. And that can include, of course, alternate means of lighting, some easily prepared food that doesn't require electric power, and preparations to weather an outage of moderate length, whether it's in the heat of summer or the cold of winter.
Yeah, and lastly, just to give maybe residents some sense of a timeline, I mean, is there kind of a wildfire season for Rocky Mountain Power that runs into a certain kind of month or date to where that sensitivity will kind of decrease and maybe people could expect less outages?
Well, it's driven by local conditions and environmental conditions. And the big variables in wildfire risk are heat, humidity, wind speed. And while the summertime is the time when those conditions tend to occur most. We've noticed on our system and other utilities throughout the West, those conditions have been extending into many, many more months throughout the year. So generally, you know, we start to pay really close attention, you know, late May, early June, and it continues, you know, well through the early fall. Generally, you know, when the snow begins to fall, of course, the wildfire risk in these areas is pretty low. But we're in a new paradigm. Wildfire behavior has been getting increasingly extreme in our service territory and throughout the West. And so we need to be prepared and be aware of conditions really at any time of the year.
All right. We've been speaking with David Eskelson and Jonna Whitesides at Rocky Mountain Power. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Most welcome.
Thank you for having us on. Appreciate it.
I'm now joined in studio by Park City Planning Director Rebecca Ward. Good morning, Rebecca.
Good morning, Parker.
And thank you. Do you want to note, this is a holiday. City Hall is closed, so we appreciate you coming in today on your day off.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You're wrapping up the city's general plan process. Understand work on that has gone on for about a year. Just want to, again, remind our listeners the importance of the general plan and what it means.
So the general plan is really a community-driven plan. It's a blueprint that guides land use policy in our built environment. And it also establishes a community vision of where we want to be in 5, 10, 15, 20 years. And this plan really becomes a guiding document for residents, staff, boards, and the Planning Commission and City Council as they contemplate future land use decisions, and it lays out themes for, you know, transportation and community character, how we plan for housing for that's affordable and attainable, how we preserve and conserve water and our open space, and also our sustainability goals.
If I have it right, I believe the last general plan was finished in 2014. When you look at that document, versus the draft of this new one, what are some kind of major differences that stick out to you or just, yeah?
Well, I'll start by saying that the four core values that were the basis for the 2014 general plan, that small town character, the sense of community, natural setting, and historic character, those values still continue to resonate with the community, and those have been the foundation for the updated vision that mountain community is now prioritized in the small town feel, preserving our natural environment and open space and our historic character. Something that's new that's been prioritized in both the vision and in the plan, when we did the statistically valid survey in the fall, 71% of respondents identified traffic as our biggest challenge. And so that is now incorporated in the vision statement that we'll be innovative with our transportation and our building of transportation options and the network for those options that meet the needs of residents and locals, the workforce, and the visitors. So the first plan theme that is addressed in the updated plan really establishes some goals and strategies to help with our transportation network.
There was a story out there about aerial transit being part of this plan, and I understand things may have changed. Is there anything you want to clarify just on that front?
Yeah, so with the initial draft, and that draft is available on our project webpage, engageparkcity.org, and that initial plan will continue to go through revisions and refinements in the coming months. There are still many opportunities for community members to engage and provide input. And in the initial draft, there were prioritization recommendations for different actions. We had a joint meeting with the Planning Commission and the City Council earlier this month, and the input was really to shift the actions to an appendix to remove the prioritization to really allow some flexibility, because the general plan is a document that is reviewed at least on an annual basis, and priorities can be established. There's some flexibility there to address the community needs at that time. So that is part of one of the updates that will be integrated as we move through this revision process.
And just finally on the general plan, what's kind of the last timeline here towards approval, and how can the public give their, you know, feedback on it?
Great. Well, first of all, thank you to the many community members who have participated in this project over the past year. There are many opportunities to come to continue to provide input. We have an online questionnaire that allows resident input that will be open through July 31st. We will also have a series of public hearings that's both with the Planning Commission and the City Council. The next meeting will be a joint meeting with the Commission and the Council. That date is anticipated to be in August, so we'll post that on our website as soon as that information is available. And then we'll continue to have public hearings throughout August, potentially into September, with the Commission and the Council. And community members can always submit input to planning@parkcity.org throughout this process.
Well, moving on to one of the other big initiatives going on in your department, the Bonanza Park mixed-use zone. This would have, you know, ramifications on this area at the center of town. Park Avenue, Deer Valley Drive, Bonanza Drive, Kearns, all in that area. I think it's about 70 acres. Do you want to talk about what this means holistically and what you're, the city's looking to achieve?
So right now, this core neighborhood is in our general commercial and light industrial zones, and those are really the most permissive zones in our current code, where the type of development that could come in, hotels are allowed, nightly rental condominiums are allowed. There are a lot of uses that are allowed that, based on community input and engagement as we went through the small area plan for the neighborhood, we heard from residents that this is really envisioned to be a mixed-use, vibrant district where we have better connectivity and we have locally serving commercial uses along street fronts that prioritize pedestrians and cyclists. And we also integrate residential units as part of that development to meet local needs for affordable and attainable housing. What we really are lacking right now is a vision of connectivity for especially cyclists and pedestrians to navigate this core neighborhood. And that's something that the small area plan established, was this network of connectivity that as the properties redevelop over time, we have a plan and a baseline established that these developers can situate their sites around to support that connectivity and also to create those vibrant storefronts, something similar to what we have along Main Street, where there's that storefront presence and vibrancy for the pedestrian scale.
And going into some of those elements, that's actually kind of written out in the code with the, can you talk about with the storefront commercial, kind of how that's written out?
So this is really a first for Park City to have this mixed use development where you have commercial along the internal neighborhood street fronts with office and residential uses above. And the code requires this mix of uses in the site planning where the window fronts, the entrances to store, to active like retail, restaurant, bars, those types of uses are along the storefront. And then the uses that don't really have that active vibrancy, the residential and office spaces would be on the upper stories. There are some elements in the code that allow for some flexibility through additional review processes, but the underlying requirement would be for that mix of uses.
And I know you all explored sort of regulating chain businesses like we have on Main Street, but I believe you're not going in that direction, but are maybe looking to regulate via square footage?
That's right. There are a lot of different approaches that were evaluated as part of the conventional chain businesses within this neighborhood. And in the end, the limitations are through square footage. So it does allow for some flexibility, but still limits the amount of conventional chain businesses within the area. It also incentivizes developers to create spaces for locally serving businesses.
Yes. Moving on, I wanted to get to the, I don't know if it's still being called the density bonus, but, you know, currently buildings in Bonanza Park are limited to 35 feet under this new code. If certain requirements are met, certain benefits, developers would be allowed to go up to 45 feet, which is four stories. Can you talk about what kind of the incentive package is there and what developers would need to offer to qualify for that?
Yeah, so to qualify for a fourth story, there are project enhancements that developers can propose, and that includes an increase in affordable housing and also making some of those units more affordable at a lower area median income. So increased housing affordability. Also, right now, the 70 acres are predominantly surface level parking, and mm-hmm. you know, how can we get that parking reduced so that people are coming, you know, on transit or on foot or on bike, so we can improve that network and get the parking that's reduced underground so that it's really a space for people. And then another community benefit that can be provided, navigating on foot, on bike, mm-hmm. in a bus, on a car right now is so challenging because of some of the disconnected street networks. So as developers come forward, if they dedicate rights of way to make some of those key connections, that is an additional project enhancement. Those are the key tier A, and mm-hmm. then also there are some tier B enhancements like car shares, bike shares, facilities that are community serving, childcare facilities, those types of installations.
And like projects. A trail connection, right? If they helped contribute to that pedestrian network that's kind of envisioned, as you mentioned.
That's right, yes.
Lastly, I wanted to hit on nightly rentals and, you know, hotels. How is this new code aiming to regulate those transitional uses?
So that is in the initial recommendation, and as it's currently drafted, nightly rentals are recommended to be prohibited so that there are housing options for residents. Mm-hmm. There are limitations recommended on hotels. Right now, under the current code, there's really no size limit on a hotel. And what we heard through the community engagement process is that this could be a neighborhood for some of the smaller scale hotels on a limited basis. So that is an element that we'll continue to work through as this goes through the review process.
And I know the Planning Commission had discussed a little bit wanting to push some of those hotel owners to maybe offer a shuttle between the airport. Is that kind of being considered?
That is in the draft code to really reduce the parking for those transient uses. And then we've seen some good examples of areas in town that currently do that, where it works well, that visitors coming to the community don't need to bring a car. Once they get here, they can take transit or other shuttles.
For any people that want to give input on Bonanza Park, Engage Park City, is that the best alternative? Or?
We encourage public engagement and look forward to hearing from the community. Please submit comments to planning@parkcity.org. And this is scheduled for a public hearing with the City Council on August 26th.
August 26th. All right. We've been speaking with Park City Planning Director Rebecca Ward. Thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
Now joined in studio by Kendall Kelly with the Arts Council of Park City and Summit County, and Maren Mullen, owner of Gallery Mar on Main Street. How's it going this morning?
Doing well. Great.
Yes. I guess to kick things off, we wanted to talk about it's plein air, correct? correct?
Yes. Excellent pronunciation.
Plein air in the gardens at the Park City Gardens on Saturday. Maren, you want to talk about this?
I would love to. This is an annual event where we like to bring in artists from all over the county to come and have a prescribed painting opportunity where they paint beginning at 3 p.m. until 5, and then at 5 o'clock we have an awards ceremony. This is a free, open to the public event. We do not charge the artists. We encourage people to buy these beautiful works of art directly from the artists. It's just a really fun event to celebrate arts in our county, and then of course in such a beautiful environment. I can't think of anywhere else I would rather be on a Saturday afternoon than Park City Gardens.
It is quite lovely. What is plein air? What can people expect in terms of the art?
It's painting out in the open air. And okay. So artists will be setting up their easels and capturing in paint or watercolors, charcoal, the surrounding area. So whether it's, you know, the detail of one flower or the whole scene, including the greenhouse and the coffee shop and maybe even the cars in the parking lot, people can capture whatever they want to. It's the essence of the space.
And is this a new event or it's been going on for a while?
No, I think the first year we did it was 2017. Okay, so we skipped last year. We wanted people to miss the event a little bit, and boy, did they. We have over 25 artists signed up and a lot of community interest.
And that is 3 to 6 on Saturday?
It is. The awards ceremony will be probably about 5:30. Okay. And Susan Meyer, the previous owner and stalwart of Main Street, Susan Meyer will be the judge for that.
All right. Moving on, there is an active call for artists. You have about a week to submit for the Summit County Fair Art Show. Do you want to talk about that, Kendall?
Yeah, absolutely. So every year the Summit County Fair happens and takes place out in Colville, as well as I think a couple other locations. And this is a fun aspect of the fair where the local residents of Summit County are able to contribute photography or pieces of artwork, watercolors, paintings, and even some ceramics and different mediums. And it's just a really great place to display your artwork, mm-hmm. as well as there's two different variations of how it will be, you know, viewed, and the public can come in and just check it out. And the Summit County Council will actually select one adult and one youth to purchase for the county's permanent public art collection. So that's something fun to recognize, is that if some of your pieces were chosen, then they'll be displayed, as well as there's going to be ribbons for just best in show and different things along those lines. It's a fun place to display your photography or art.
Are they looking for any county themed art, or is it open?
It's open. Yeah, you can have any variation of what art works for you and looks, you know, is in your wheelhouse.
And then we also have the annual event at the Kimball the Monster Drawing Rally. That artist application is coming up on August 15th for the September 13th event.
Yeah.
You want to touch on that as well?
Absolutely. So Monster Drawing Rally is a really great collaborative event that takes place with Kimball Arts Center and the Arts Council of Park City and Summit County. This is a live drawing event. It allows the spectators to see the artists in action. You're able to build relationships with those artists by seeing them in person, working on their art right there live. And this is a really great way to support two local nonprofits. The proceeds of this 3 power rounds of art being produced is then donated back to the two organizations. And so the artists, you know, they give their time and they really come in and they produce some amazing work. I also feel the same way about the plein air. I can't believe what these artists can do in such a short period of time. Mm-hmm. It's very impressive. So that's a really fun event. There's drinks and a DJ, and it's just very like live and fun and interactive. And
it's chaotic in a good way.
Seems rowdy.
Yeah, it is. I definitely feel that way.
And so they're drawing like as soon as they get there and then selling those pieces.
Yes, exactly. And it's not monsters. They're drawing everything. It's whatever their wheelhouse of artwork or things that they create, that's what they're going to be producing. And it's, again, 3 rounds. They're going to do different variations. Maybe they'll come with something already started. They'll start from scratch right then and there. And it's just a really fun way to collect art in an affordable way.
Yes. And then about a week or later in August, the Art on the Trails event, is that, I believe that's with Bays and Recreation. That's been going on for a while, and that's coming up again on August 23rd.
Yes, so we just wanted to let people know that tickets are now on sale for Art on the Trails. This is a little different than some of our other events where it's not just a show-up type of scenario. You do want to get tickets. There's different time slots for the tours. This particular event takes place starting at Copper Moose Farm Stand, and you walk along McLeod Creek Trail, and you're going to see different performances along the way. So it's a really fun way, an accessible way, to be able to interact with art and nature and see these beautiful performances. We have a variation of singer-songwriters and rhythm tap dance. We have a band that will be playing at Copper Moose Farm Stand. There's going to be cultural fire events out of Heber will be there performing, Utah Symphony, Park City Opera. It's really a fun way to get
diverse.
Experience different types of performances while being out on the beautiful trail.
And are those tickets on the Arts Council Park City Summit County website?
Yes, you can go to pcsearts.org and be able to find those tickets on the Art on the Trails subpage.
And then tomorrow, Marin, there's the gallery stroll that takes place each month on Main Street. How many galleries participate? What can people expect if they've never came out for that?
All of the galleries who are part of the Gallery Association, and you can pick up a map at any of the participating galleries, will be open. So from 6 to 9, we love to have people come through, free, open to public. Oftentimes there's food and drinks available. We have a special show. We have world-renowned artist Hunt Slonim, who will be opening an exhibition of more than 40 paintings at Gallery Mar. We're so excited to be able to have this work, some never-before-seen pieces and sculpture. And then up and down the street, the theme for this gallery stroll is live art. So we have a lot of plein air happening this weekend. Several of the galleries, including Summit Gallery, I know that they have a local artist, Kim Draw, who will be doing some beautiful mixed-media work. She likes to paint our particular area, and then out at Sundance, and a few other galleries will have live artists too.
Yes. Obviously, do want to mention next weekend, after this weekend, is the Kimball Arts Festival. Do you usually stay open during that event?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's like any other weekend for us.
In terms of sales, is it an increase compared to your average weekend?
It's like any other weekend for sales for us. Yeah. We love the Kimball Festival. We love seeing it on Main Street.
Yeah.
And then how is the Arts Council kind of contribute?
You know, we actually don't have much involvement with the Kimball Arts Festival, mm-hmm. but what we really like to promote and to share with the community, and I'll be sharing some information around that soon, is the local artists that will be participating. That's a fun way for us to this year there's quite a few local residents and Utah residents that are going to be participating in the festival, so we like to really showcase those folks that are
and the YAAs right from the Kimball
yes,
the young
that
artists
is.
They do a booth, and that is rad, really great opportunity to see young up-and-coming artists.
Definitely. We have an intern, we have three interns that are in the YAA.
Oh.
And so one of those interns, Scout Maziars, will be at the gallery at Create PC. He'll also be doing some live painting for our gallery stroll stop as well.
Anything fun going on down at Create PC as of late?
You know, we have our summer fall exhibition going right now, so it's a great time to come by. And then tomorrow evening for the gallery stroll, you're able to stop by,
cool.
see the open studios upstairs and some artists in action there, as well as we're doing a fun mosaic activation. So you can come and add to a mosaic that our interns put together and some live painting.
How many artists do you kind of have in there at max?
Right now we have around 38 or so.
Sizable.
And so it really varies between 35 to 30 or to 40, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's does change each season. And also the artists bring in different things throughout the season. It's a fun way to just check out what they have going on or new things that they're working on.
All right, I'm about out of time, but is there anything else you two want to mention?
Just get out and enjoy some arts and culture this weekend. There's a lot of really fun things, starting with Friday night with Park City Gallery Stroll, going into Saturday with the plein air event at Park City Gardens. What a fun way to come up for the afternoon and spend an afternoon in the gardens and then go to dinner or just experience a whole weekend of fun.
Yes, we've been speaking with Kendall Kelly with the Arts Council of Park City and Summit County, and Maren Mullen, owner of Gallery Mar. Thanks for joining me this morning.
Thanks, Parker.
You've been listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Parker Malatesta. Thanks for tuning in this morning. Happy Pioneer Day once again, and a reminder that local and state government offices will be closed today. The state holiday, as a reminder, commemorates July 24th, 1847, the day members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints reportedly arrived in the Salt Lake Valley. Today, Summit and Wasatch County libraries will be closed along with the Park City Library, but you can expect normal hours at the Mark Park City Ice Arena and Bays and Rec Fieldhouse. Wasatch County residents expect trash pickup to be delayed a day. However, in Summit County, it will not be delayed. And then state liquor stores are also closed today. Post offices are not.